Welcome to Ink and Pete, where memoir and Ireland share the stage. We talk with authors, guides, ghostwriters, and other free spirits drawn to memoir or enchanted by Ireland. I'm Barb Robitaille.
And I'm Craig Stewart.
Whenever there's a chance to write, I say yes.
Our guest on this episode of Ink and Pete is Barbara O'Neill, teacher, writer, facilitator, and perhaps the most coveted title of all, a former elementary school librarian. Barbara works with elders in the Boston area, helping them develop their writing voices, a pursuit that brings her great pleasure. She also holds an annual retreat in Taos, New Mexico, where writers of all ages and experience come together to explore and develop their writing practices. Barbara joined us on memoir tours in the fall of 2019, where we compared writing notes, created new stories, and began a friendship based on a shared love of writing and grandchildren.
When Barbara said that she was a former elementary school librarian, that was like, that said so much to me.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. I have such fond memories of school librarians and school libraries in general.
Absolutely. I do too. They were like second moms to me growing up. I spent most of my time in the library. And so the librarians were just, they were so kind and helpful. And they knew me in a way that no one else did.
Yeah. When you're in the trenches as a classroom teacher and you can bring them to the library, it just sort of seems unfair how fun they have it. You know, handing out these little gems of books to the kids they know so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to, I'm repeating myself, I used to love to go. And the librarian would set aside books for me. She said, "Hey, Barb, I think you're going to really like these." And she was always right. And so I always felt seen by the librarian in a way that other teachers didn't really, and people in general didn't see me.
Right.
And so I loved them.
Right. And that's the sort of the aura that Barbara O'Neill has as well.
Oh, when she told us that, I thought, yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly who you are.
Exactly who you are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's lovely. And she has great stories to tell. So she was on our tour last fall, of course. Mm-hmm. We got a chance to know her and her sister. And
you know, there was one day the group went out and Barbara decided to stay behind. She said, "I just want a day all by myself to just be here." I said, "That's great. I'll be here. You know, no problem. Let me know if you need anything." And as you know, the printer for the writers to print out their work was in our cottage. So a couple hours into the morning, Barbara shows up. "May I print this?" "Absolutely. Go ahead." She said, "I'm having the best day." I said, "I'm so glad." She said, "No, you have no idea. I'm not writing. I am decluttering my computer. I am taking all the bits of writing, the stories, the little bits I've written here and there that have been scattered." And she said, "I'm sifting through them and I'm organizing them. I'm deleting the ones I don't want, but I'm putting front and center the ones I do want to continue to work on." So it was like house cleaning. And she said, "This is exactly what I needed."
Mm, nice.
And she had the best day.
Yeah. Well, when you think of it, she's been writing, as she says in our conversation, she's been writing since she was old enough to write and hold a pencil. So she has a lot of material to work with.
And it's all organized now.
Nice. That's great. Well, she says she's getting a project together.
It doesn't surprise me, and I'll look forward to it.
Yeah.
So, what do you say? Let's put the kettle on and have a listen to Barbara O'Neill.
Hi, Barbara. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Craig.
You are quite the writer and quite the writing teacher. Could you give our listeners a little history about where you've been and what you do with writing?
Well, I've always loved to write as long as I could write, and I never felt very good at it. My teachers weren't wowed by my writing, but they were usually a format that didn't interest me. But I always kept a journal and always sort of processed my life through writing. I think partly being in a family of four kids, and I was by far the youngest, I sometimes think that writing is where I could be heard. The journal never, you know, was always listened, it's always there. And they say that the youngest in the family is often the observer and the one who notices things. And I think I did a lot of watching and noticing growing up. So I would write these things down. So I think I've been observing the world for a long time. And I thought this was my own little private pleasure until I read a book by Natalie Goldberg called Writing Down the Bones.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And that was a wide open eye opener for me because she firmly believes that everyone can write. It's not that there are these magic people that are the writers, the artists, that if you practice with anything, you can do it. And so like a violinist would play the violin to learn, you've got to practice to play an instrument. And to be do sports, you've got to practice playing tennis and hitting those tennis balls against a wall. Why wouldn't that be true with writing? And so she believes in starting a practice and keeping at it and writing regularly. And then you start folding in detail and you start just playing around with language more because you're using it and crafting it. And so that just cracked me open. And I went to study with her once out in New Mexico where she was teaching. And then I just kept going back because I was interested in the way she was teaching. And then I'd come back to Massachusetts where I live and friends would say, you know, I've always wanted to write. What do you do out there in New Mexico when you go there? And my teacher always used to say, don't talk about it, get them to do it. You know, just say, get a pen. You want to write? Let's write together. So I began slowly. I'd been a children's librarian for 13 years, and I'd left that work. And then slowly I eased into leading writing groups, which I've done for the last 10 years.
Nice.
And I work in a retirement community with elder writers, and I do a writing retreat myself now in New Mexico.
Yes. Deepening the writing life. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because my teacher, because Natalie actually had stopped teaching out in a place that I really loved. I'd grown to love Taos, and she had stopped doing that. And so I kind of checked in with her, and she said, go ahead, you do it. So we have different students, and of course I've evolved into my own kind of teacher, but that's where it all began. And I just had to keep going back there.
That's what a lovely place. I have only seen pictures. And of course I was on your website, which we will mention right now is writinglifebarbaraoneal.com. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
writinglifebarbaraoneal.com. We'll mention that again later. I love what you just said about don't talk about it, but just get them to do it. So that's great to say. And then how do you get them to do it? Let's say someone comes to you who's like, my fifth grade teacher told me I couldn't write and blah, blah. How do you encourage them in the moment to just get going?
Well, there are many different you know, theories on this. I read about what all different teachers say. And Julia Cameron, who wrote The Artist's Way, talks about writing 3 pages a day. Every morning, just write. I'm interested in using prompts to write because I think that's not just a journal. It's not just a journal is very valuable, but it's not just kind of reviewing your life. A prompt or a poem or a story or a passage will then jog your thinking to something new, usually. So I use prompts and poetry, and I might read something to my students and say, whatever comes up from that, write for 10 minutes or write for a half an hour. I use timed writing because I think timed writing creates pressure. We all, you know, the inner critic is just something that everyone has. And it's easy to think, I can't do this. I don't know. I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it another time. It's like, no, you're going to do it right now. We're going to write for 10 minutes. It works for a lot of things.
So,
and when you do that and I time the writing, and I say, keep your hand moving, just go across the margins, don't worry about spelling, don't cross out, just keep writing. Inevitably, people will say, oh my gosh, I have not thought about what I just wrote about in years, or I tapped into something I didn't even know I felt, because you're going below the discursive mind, the mind that tells you what to write. You've reached your heart or your elbow. I mean, we store stories in our bodies. So writing practice was what we call it, where you're doing free writing prompted by a prompt. It's sort of a springboard into writing. I found it works really well for me and also for my students.
Excellent.
And what I tell them, you're home and I'm not here, you're not in class with me, get a poetry book, open it up, look at a title of something, and just start writing. You know, use that as a prompt. They're prompts are everywhere.
You mentioned the inner critic. Like, it seems some of us have more of an inner critic than others. How, even in these writing exercises or practices, how do you acknowledge the inner critic or shut it down or give it a place to play or keep the inner critic from stopping you, from stifling you?
One way is to just keep going. For instance, if you don't know what to write, you can write, I don't know what to write. I don't know what to write. I've got a blank. And you know, the brain gets tired of that. Inevitably, something will start happening. So that's one way, is keep the hand moving. And it may be tedious at first, and then you're just going to move into something else. And some people will write to the critic, have a relationship with it.
Okay, oh, that's kind of fun.
Make a deal. You know, when we're done, we'll go get chocolate. Or, you know, here's a deal. There's all different ways to do it. It helps to be in a group. It helps to be with other people because they're all doing it too. Mm-hmm. But I think the time writing helps too. You've got 10 minutes, get going, stop fooling around. I mean, Anne Lamott says, the worst thing that can happen is not that people don't like your writing, it's that you may never get to your writing.
Oh, yeah.
Your life will go along and you will never have done the writing and the thing you dream of. So there's the real risk, not the inner critic, not the fact you might be criticized. Just get going. You've got work to do.
I love that. I actually love that, because my next question to you was like, why even write in the first place? You mentioned that you kept a journal, you're an observer, you have experienced the world through writing. Why should someone even attempt to write?
I think there's a great pleasure for some of us in writing. So that's enough. If you love it, that is enough. I mean, people who are weavers and make a basket, they're not weaving because they need a basket usually. They're weaving because they love the in and out of the process. And I think just many of us have a great pleasure writing. And so why not do it? And I think the sad thing in our culture is there's so much, there's such a high bar for writing. And I'm sure we've all run into this. If we're writers, people say, oh, you write, are you published? And immediately there's that, oh, you know, there's so much judgment. I think people are just trying to be nice. They're just trying to take an interest. But no one would say to someone who plays tennis, are you going to be in Wimbledon? Like, when are you going to go pro? No one asks people that. But writing is very loaded.
Yes.
So I think there's the pure pleasure of writing. And then there's the chance of self-publishing. Many people put together their memoir and then find a way to make a little booklet of it just for them and their families.
Yes.
Or maybe they send an article in somewhere or send one little piece in. But if you love it, you should do it. And without the expectation that it's going to be Random House, it's going to pick it up and it's going to be a major novel or memoir. And also when you do that, when you let go of the expectation, often amazing things can happen.
Give me an example. Do you have an example of a student or in your own life, something that's happened amazing that's happened from your writing?
I guess I could talk about my brother. I don't know if this is relevant, but my brother was in Vietnam and he happily survived, but he got back and for 30 years, he was really sort of had a lot of post-traumatic stress and he began writing about it. Finally, and he suddenly one day just cracked open and he just wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote about his experience. And it really was healing, that alone. It was actually published and it's been a great thing for Vietnam veterans to read because he was able to put to words something that they'd experienced.
Wow, that is that's sort of more of a powerful story than I anticipated, but yeah.
Our world, I think writing through an experience, it doesn't have to be a traumatic experience, but something that's been an obsession or something that just, you just keep coming back to it, is worth, just go with that. Just follow it and really do, just follow it and write, and often it'll lead you to something, whatever it is. It just, you trust the process of writing. And I think it can lead you. I mean, for me, I was writing about my mother all the time, and I thought, I'm sorry, everyone, if I was in a group. But then you realize you've got to write until the water runs clear. Like, there's energy there, and so you stick with it. You don't just say, oh, this isn't interesting. If it's interesting to you, it's probably interesting to other people too. You know, I always say the more detailed you are, the more oddly, the more universal it is.
Oh, that's
tell
interesting.
Your story, people can jump in like, oh, that kind of sounds familiar to me. I've kind of experienced that.
I love the line, you have to write until the water runs clear. That's nice. I like that. Now, as I understand it from reading your website, there's a lot of sharing that goes on at your mm-hmm. retreats. Mm-hmm. How does someone, you're in a vulnerable place when you share your writing. Mm-hmm. How do you, as a teacher, use that moment to help someone further her writing?
Well, we have ground rules on share on, you know, in the class. It's, you know, the confidentiality, nothing leaves. This is, we're creating a safe space here where you can share. And so the way that people respond, if it's a time when we are giving feedback, we give recall. We don't, it's not a critique group. We give recall. I could feel how hot that was, the way you described that. Or, oh, those words were so interesting, the way you describe, you know, they'll give feedback so the writer hears what they wrote. And then they realize, oh, that came across. People are interested in that. So when listeners give you feedback on what they heard, not critiquing it, but just noticing that the writer, you know, realizes how wonderful to be heard and to be mm-hmm. noticed and to get feedback.
So you would say that in a group of someone who's never written or shared before, they would see this process going on and then learn to trust it and then jump in. Sort of.
Yes. And I always say you can pass. And people rarely do, you know, with one little nudge. Come on. Everyone says, we'd love to hear it. You know, come on. People will read it. And the thing about writing is we're so alone in writing. You're on that. Your words are on the page. But when you give voice to them, to your writing, you hear it. First of all, you know, you hear what you wrote. Others hear what you wrote. And now it's an alive thing. I think even hearing it out loud yourself is validating.
I would agree with that completely. Yeah. Because if you think of it in some ways, of course, writing is, I mean, it's communication, right? So you very much would like to have an audience or at least get some sense that your words are landing on someone's ears. So do you have any personal anecdotes about where your own writing has taken you that really have supported your continuing quest as a teacher and as a writer?
Well, I've always been a teacher. I taught elementary school, and then I was a librarian where I did classes with the kids, kindergarten through sixth grade, on literature and on research and things like that. So I am a teacher at heart. Mm-hmm. And so I love teaching the writing, but what it also does for me is I write with my students and I read aloud my work with them. And I'll read something that I don't think is very good, but so I try to demonstrate being vulnerable. They'll say, I wrote this, I don't know where it's going, I'm not sure, you know, maybe there's a nugget in here I want to use. But so writing with students, which I now do three mornings a week, I just leave so elated. I have learned so much from them about something that I may not be as good at, like dialogue or sensory detail. So my writing is deepened by teaching. I mean, I always tell students that writers are our teachers. Whether we're reading published writing or whether we're listening to each other, we have so much to learn from each other. So my writing is absolutely deepened by teaching. And I think it's because I am doing what I said earlier. I'm practicing a lot. I'm writing a lot. And then I'll go home and often we write by hand, but then I'll go and type up things that I've written that I think I might want to do something with.
Nice. And what would that something be?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that I'm not sure about. I love writing and I love teaching, but the teaching takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. So I don't get to doing anything with my writing. So whenever there's an opportunity to be published, if there's a little booklet being made, and you know, I have a church that I'm a part of, a Unitarian Church, and we make a little booklet every year on a certain theme, I always enter a piece. Whenever there's a chance to write, I say yes. If I have to give a speech or a talk or people ask me things, I say yes. I'd love to put together a memoir, and I have a lot of pieces of it, maybe just for myself, just for my kids, for my family. I'm working on something that we'll see how it goes.
You wrote a very nice piece about how you met your button man, that which we posted on our website. And is that the sort of idea you're thinking about, of making collections of these types of stories for your memoir? Or
Yes. And I tell my students, and I feel this strongly, one way to learn about gathering your material together is to look to see what other people have done. Look at memoir, look at the structure, how the writers structure their work. Some people do it in chapters, some people do it in sections, some people do it all out of order. It doesn't start at the beginning or go to the end. It's the end because it's the beginning. And there's a writer I really like, Abigail Thomas, and her piece, her memoir, she's written a couple of them. Some chapters are half a page.
Yeah.
No, and then the chapter, three pages. There is so much up. Maybe you might have a poem, you might have an essay. I love this idea of a collection of things that could be short pieces, maybe even with illustrations in them. You know, the graphic novels become big now with drawings tied in with writing. So that's what I think of, is kind of a collage of writing, all different kinds of writing around the theme of memoir. And I often say that, you know, people say, when am I going to write my memoir? Well, our prompts, you know, lead you to various chunks of your life. Maybe it's what I wore, where I traveled, the garden I have known, a mountain I love. Those are all things that are coming back to you. And so that's always going to be a theme of you within all your writing.
Nice. So this probably goes without saying, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What is the value of reading someone else's memoir?
You learn what to do and what not to do. You may read it and think, oh, that, you know, this is terrible. I can't even finish it. Why is that? You might want to ask yourself, why does that not resonate? Why does someone else's memoir really, it just makes you want to tell your own story? So, and again, about the structure, how did they do it? Like, you got to be a detective. How do they structure this thing? Also with memoir, it's very important, I think, to have a theme. It's not an autobiography. It's not everything. It's something you feel strongly about, or something that affected your life strongly. Like, there's a book called Candy Freak. It's basically about candy. You know, or certainly you've seen people have written about alcohol or about depression, or it can be a travel memoir. Often just you narrow it down to something that holds together rather than trying to do too much. So I think a memoir is good when you've got a thread going through it that the reader can follow, and it moves, and maybe the protagonist has changed in some way or learned something through that writing and that experience.
Which it sounds like what you have done your whole life. It sounds like you have changed and grown, and your writing has informed you. And
absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really has. My writing has changed so much over time. And I find that the things I've written in the past, actually when I was at memoir tours last fall, I went into my computer and looked at a lot of the writing I'd done, because I've generated a lot of material. I realized, oh, this is about something else. This is sort of about me in my family is where I landed. And some of the themes that came up through that I'd done a lot of writing, but I'd never really thought, why? What's the nugget in there? What is the, why, like that kind of who cares? What's the point? But when you write a lot, it starts to come to you. Oh, look, I keep coming back to these things. And that helps you develop a focus.
Nice. Nice. You know, one of my favorite images of last fall's memoir tours was walking by Cottage One and seeing you and your sister Ruth sitting at the table early in the morning, just feverishly writing away. It was a really lovely sight.
Oh, yeah. And you would come to start the fire for us, but we would have already started it at 5 a.m.
I know, you were up way, way early.
We were just so happy to have that time and that space to do our writing, to be together, to share. And I will say, we felt so taken care of by you and everyone there.
Oh, that's nice to hear. It was a lovely, lovely time. It was a lovely time.
It was. And reading at night, you know, we got to do what I'm just talking about.
Yes.
Having a chance to read our work at night. It was wonderful. Hear each other's work.
Yeah. And what I find what resonates with me with what you're saying is, when you hear someone else's writing and you hear their vulnerability, even though you may not have had a similar experience, somehow it seems like you can relate to their story better somehow.
Yes, there's no question. There's no question. I mean, if you're writing in generalities, it's, you know, yawn, you know. Mm-hmm. But when someone really starts to crack open their life in the detail, we want to hear that. We care about each other. I think as humans, we want to know what life experience is like for everyone.
Yep.
And that's why I think everyone has a story, because everyone's had a different life. So there's no the writers and everybody else. I think we all have something to bring to the page.
Good for you. I love hearing that, because I ask people on Ink and Pete, you know, a lot of people say, hey, I don't have a story. I've led a pretty boring life. I just go to work and I come home. And to a person, and you would fall into this as well, to a person, they've all said that's simply not the case. Everyone has a story.
Absolutely. And so and it doesn't seem interesting, but you get granular about it and you describe it, where you live, you know, just the detail of it is interesting, because none of us have had that experience. So I just think it's getting down. You've got to start bringing in all those aspects of writing, bringing in detail, bringing in the names of things, bringing in the weather, the temperature, what was happening in the world at the time. I mean, there's a lot of elements to memoir that ground it.
Absolutely.
So once you get practicing, you get the story down, then you can start to hone it with some of this, some more detail.
So the writing practice, you would recommend people write just daily? For how long? For what does that look like?
Well, I like to say 10 minutes, because I always say to people, do you have 10 minutes? I mean, I know you're busy. We're all busy. But do you have 10 minutes?
Yeah.
I have 10 minutes. So I often say, write for 10 minutes. Set your alarm. Set a timer. I'm just going to write for 10 minutes. I'm going to do the topic. It's going to be what I noticed. I often give that. If there's nothing else you can think of, what I noticed, 10 minutes. Keep your hand moving, and then stop. And if you want to keep going, you can. And of course, often, once you're started, you can keep going. Every day or twice a week. I mean, set your intention. It might be twice a week. I'm going to write for 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I also say, put it on your calendar. You put a dentist appointment on your calendar. You put things on your calendar. If someone wants to do something with you, you look at your calendar. Oh, no, I'm busy. And what you're busy with is your own project. You don't have to tell anyone that. But, you know, put yourself first. You're important too. If you have, find the time. If it's, you know, William Stafford wrote at 5 a.m. He wrote from 5 to 7 every day of his life. Find the time and just do it. And just get it into a habit of writing short pieces.
Excellent advice. Mm-hmm. It kind of heads back to what you mentioned at the top of this with Anne Lamott, you know, saying the worst thing is not writing.
The worst, it meant so much to me. She said something like that. We could find it. The worst thing is not that someone won't like your writing or that you've got an inner critic. The worst thing is you didn't get your work done. You didn't get the writing done that you care about.
Yeah. No, I like that. Barbara, it's just such a pleasure talking with you, and we're going to wrap up with our two stock questions, and then we'll go get more information about how to get in touch with you. The first question we have is an easy one. It's a softball. What are you reading right now?
I am reading I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings by Maya Angelou. I had never read it, and it's just had its 40th anniversary. She wrote it 40 years ago. And what a treasure. I had no idea. I mean, she's a poet, and James Baldwin apparently encouraged her to write her memoir. And the detail of living in Stamps, Alabama in her childhood is just beautiful. She's the sensory detail, the visual description. I can't recommend it more. Mm. And I always sort of was on those books. So I always thought I should read it. And I finally am. And I love it.
Nice. This next question is a little harder. So where have you found joy where you least expected it?
Well, I am a new grandmother, and I knew that having a child, I love children, and I was looking forward to having a grandchild, and I did not expect it to be as joyful as it is. Hmm. And I was trying to think, why is that? And she's a year and a half, a little more now, and she's learning language. And I just love sort of the human being learning language. She loves books, and I read to her, and she'll recite them back. So I am beginning to kind of go back to the beginning with her of having fun with language and the way she'll make up a word, you know, make a noun into a verb, or she's just beginning to put sentences together. But I guess I love words. I mean, I do love words, mm-hmm. and I love books, and I'm loving this grandchild of mine starting at the very beginning.
And you sort of didn't see that coming.
I didn't.
Yeah.
I knew it would be, no, I just did. I thought, oh, I just, I'll back up. And being a librarian too, I'm suddenly coming back to the work I used to do that I kind of let go of. I'm on to other things now, but now I'm getting children's books out of the library. And so I hadn't really, it all comes back to the detail, Craig. Yeah. I thought, oh, how nice to have this young child. No, it's the detail. What do I love about it? I like her speaking. I like the writing. I like the books. So it's, you know, we think of things in broad strokes, but the detail is what surprised me.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, when you're talking about being a librarian, a school librarian, I would have to say that is probably one of the most important jobs or one of the most fun jobs I can think of. I remember my librarians from grade school, and I remember I was a school teacher for 20 years as well. And the librarian was like, yeah, you've got this thing dialed. Here, you get to hand out books that kids love. And oh my goodness. Yeah.
The head of my school said, I shared the job with a friend too, which was amazing. And the head of our school, we'd have meetings with him. He'd say, just don't tell anyone how happy you are.
I know.
They've got parent conferences. They're exhausted. And you two are floating around on air.
I know.
And we'd been teachers, so we knew how hard it is to be a classroom teacher.
Oh, yeah.
And so to be in the library, oh, my gosh.
It was heaven. That's the best. Okay, Barbara O'Neill. Now, the way you can get in touch with this wonderful teacher is go to her website, writinglifebarbaraoneill.com. She's got classes going all week long. And these are in Lincoln, Mass. Is that it?
They're in the Boston area.
Area. Okay. So if I'm here in Washington, that won't do me much good. But yeah. People in your area, that's good. Look for you. Also, you've got a retreat coming up, Deepening the Writing Life in and that's in Taos. And holy smokes. Boy, I would love to take that someday.
Yeah, I hope you will.
Doesn't look like there are very many men writing in the world. That's what it's like.
That is true. That is true, Craig. I have two male students out of about 40 students right now.
Yeah. I guess it's maybe, I mean, there are tons of men writing, but they're not going to your retreats.
That's true.
Or ours. Anyway, Barbara, thank you so much. It's great talking with you, and best of luck writing, and have fun with your granddaughter.
Great. Thank you, Craig. It's great to talk with you.
All right. We'll be in touch.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Ink and Pete, a production of Memoir Tours Ireland.
For more information on Memoir Tours, visit memoirtours.com.
Until next time, may you find joy where you least expect it.